in New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Mubaraka Ibrahim, and this is Mornings with Mubaraka. We are streaming live from the Beaver Hill section of New Haven, Connecticut, and live on TuneIn Radio, as well as newhavenindependent.org. You can find us live in so many places. So if you're watching this video, then you're probably on Facebook or Periscope or StreamMe. So no matter where you are, whether you're in your car or you're in your office or you're at home, you can listen every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. So, this Wednesday, we are talking to Miss Ashley Stewart. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, Ashley is a graduate student at the Yale School of Forestry.
Yep, and Environmental Studies.
And Environmental Studies. That school name seems so long to me.
It is. It feels long when you're telling someone,
yes.
Like...
The Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies.
Most of us just cut it.
Yeah,
we would just say forestry.
Okay. All right, so I don't feel like I'm slighting you. Okay, great. So Ashley grew up in Hartford, in the Hartford area, and has worked in Connecticut for many years. She is passionate about her community, the Black community, and wants to find ways to support our living and thriving here in our country, America. Having spent 10 years as an engineer, Ashley has chosen to focus her future on being an advocate for the Black community's environmental concerns. Ashley is in New Haven doing research at Yale and finds every opportunity she can to recharge in Black spaces. Ashley hopes to encourage Black women to continue to care for their families and community through caring for their environment and being a part of local decision making. And today we are going to talk a little bit about the environment, how it actually affects us on a personal level, on a community level. We hear all of these kind of like, I call it hell in a handbasket stories, right? So we have major protests going on all over the world about, you know, oh, we're at the brink of disaster and there's nothing that we can do, and if we don't act right now, we're throwing away the earth. And I think that all of those concerns obviously are very valid, but sometimes it's really hard for people to bring that information on a personal level and what we can do on a daily basis. And also one of the things that I see, and I could be incorrect in this, is in the Black community in particular, there's not as much pressure. Like, that's when you ask people, Black people, what's your top 10 concerns, right?
Right.
Maybe if they kind of woke, it's 10.
Yeah.
And I might not be, am I assuming, making a wrong assumption?
No, I think we have to, as a community of Black people, we have to look at what does environment even mean, right? I don't think we typically use the word, right? And we save that word for woke people or people that like eat nuts and berries, self-proclaimed. I mean, we save the word environment for a specific type of person, but we are concerned about our families, our health, our water, our access to resources, the things that make up our environment. So I think if we, as a community, kind of looked at the definition, like, and did some a little bit self-reflecting on what does environment mean for me, you know, then the conversations of climate change or recycling or whatever will feel a little more relevant for us. Mm-hmm. It won't seem so like heady or, I don't know, bougie or whatever the image is that comes to mind. It will feel more real, and it can come inside of your house and say, okay, this has to do with how much stuff I throw away. Mm-hmm. This has to do with the quality of the food that I bring into my house. This has to do with the water that's coming out of my tap, things like that, that I actually care about.
When we think about environmental issues, for me, when I think of the larger environmental issues, one of the things that come to mind that I don't think that we readily kind of like automatically attached to it is some of the major storms that have happened. Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Maria, like it, the way that it is affecting people of color when you have these huge storms that some people say, oh, well, you know, these are just natural disasters, mm-hmm. the natural disasters that are the result of this climate change that we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. Why don't you think that people in the Black community in particular kind of like connect those larger issues to what we're doing? Like, mm-hmm. how do we connect, hey, me recycling is actually going to affect rather than not there's a hurricane in Puerto Rico, right? You know?
Yeah, actually, I don't know. I might say something pretty political if I, like, try to dig into that question too much. But what I will say is that people that are vulnerable will be vulnerable when events like hurricanes happen, be more susceptible. So, like, we all have a flood. Those that are richest can bounce back and adjust quicker, right? Those that are not or don't have access have trouble with rebuilding, having options for moving away from a hazard, mm-hmm. right? So you hear about people being stuck in flood zones and things like that. I think that's what worries me the most for Black people, for Black community, is like getting us to a place where we have more options when things happen. I think we could also be a part of the proactive work. But first, I think it's a little bit of survival of how can we at least establish ourselves in a place that we won't be so susceptible when something happens. I think the first work is meeting day-to-day needs and then planning long-term. And I don't know if that's like hitting what you're really asking, but I do have a perspective on it. And yeah.
So how do you, were making a career pivot because of your passion of helping people understand this issue and people in the Black community in the first place. What was it that made you want to make that pivot?
That's a great question. Honestly, I was one of those kids of that generation where it was like, get girls into science, you know, STEM, everything. And I took it, right? My mother really wanted us to, like, do better than her generation, right? So she pushed science and education on us, and I felt like I did all the right steps. But when I got into industry, I realized race was under everything. Mm-hmm. No matter what we did, race was always that hidden thing or that quiet voice that was, like, impacting who we decide to put money in, where money's allocated, or what's important and what's not. And even my general success inside of the field, like whether I'm welcome as a Black woman into this environment field or into engineering field. So it made me do some soul searching and redefining of like what's really important, right? For me and people like me, I want to be about a part of like pushing the door wide open, because the next young girl that decides to be a civil engineer shouldn't have to go through the same things that I did, shouldn't have to feel awkward inside of a meeting, shouldn't have to wonder about whether her smartness or her intellect will be questioned because of her skin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what about that made you want to, as opposed to staying in civil engineering and continuing to knock down that door, what made you want to pivot into environmental?
I think ultimately it's, you know, some people decide to like work inside of a system and like make progress inside of a system. I made the pivot because I wanted to focus on Black community. Like, I would mostly be talking to primarily white people, white spaces about my worthiness of being in a place, right? Or trying to encourage more Black people to be inside of white spaces. And instead, I value more helping Black people get to what they want, mm-hmm. instead of like trying to persuade white spaces that they should value Black people. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a radical move for me, but I just really want Black community to thrive and to, like, to live inside of the beautiful beauty that they have. Like,
what do you think is the number one concern of Black communities in Connecticut? Number one environmental concern? Or let me rephrase that. What is the thing that impacts Black communities in Connecticut the most in terms of their environment?
I think the number one thing that impacts Black community is not being at the decision-making table, not being at your local town council, being within municipal decisions that impact us every day. It impacts whether or not the trash pickup comes twice a week or once a week. It impacts whether that...
Does somebody's trash pickup come twice a week?
Well, I mean, it's an option. I don't know. But, you know, being a part of the decision-making, right? So that, not that things are happening to you, but you're a part of how it happens. And I think that's a huge hurdle for Black community. We should be a part of defining what we need and not given something and said, okay. And like, we've seen lots, vacant lots deteriorate and homes that are abandoned and that hurt our property values or create infestation in our community and like encourage things that we don't feel comfortable with, but we don't actually have the power to change. And I think the biggest hurdle is getting more representation at the deciding table.
When we talk about Black communities, particularly Black women, what is the role that you see that Black women play in terms of how they are bringing environmental concerns into their community?
I think throughout time we've seen when Black women make a choice, they make movements and they show, like, they change the world, right? So if Black women can value the cleanliness of water, right here, or lead concerns or whatever the community's issues are, if Black women make it a priority, it is a priority for Black community. I think they are a catalyst inside of our community. They drive what our focuses are. Because it's the mom, the kids, the spouses. Like, we're impacting where we go. So, I don't know. I think in some sense, I would love for us to be a little bit more united in deciding, hey, what would actually better our community and have a conversation. Not assuming that we'll all agree, but that we can all work towards something.
When we talk about Black people in the environment, how has it changed over the years?
Actually, I just sat in a class about this week, and one of the comments were, like, there's an assumption that Black people haven't been in the environmental movement, or that in some way the environmental movement needs to welcome new faces or new voices, but Black people have always been a part of the environment, has always been talking about environmental issues, justice, connection with the environment throughout time. It's a part of our history. Just like the trauma is a part of our history here in America, so is the beautiful parts of connecting with land. And, like, for instance, I love the story of how okra came to the United States inside of a Black woman's hair. It's an African woman's hair. Like,
tell me the story. After
oh, really? So, basically, it was just the seeds of okra were braided into an African woman that was taken for slavery and was planted here in America. Okra is
intentionally?
Yeah.
Hair.
Oh. Yeah. Like, braided into her hair. I mean, there's probably more research I can do about it, but it makes me nostalgic about what Black people can do and be and how we are still very much connected to our land. I think our traumatic history here in America has tried to separate us and make nature and outdoors seem like something distant that we shouldn't be in or shouldn't have access to. But
so this is always an interesting conversation for me because I've been privy to be a part of conversations about that when black people were no longer enslaved, the trauma of slavery made us want nothing to do with land or gardening or, but that was a part of who we were before we were enslaved. Mm-hmm. And so the healing work that has to happen is to reconnect black people to the land in spite of and despite of the trauma that we receive from being forced to work the land.
Right.
How does that work? How does that work happen today?
Yeah, I'll use myself as an example because I've been trying to work that out for myself, right? Like, I, for the first time last summer, had a community garden plot, and I'm naturally a person that doesn't like bugs. I don't touch the ground. You know, I'm environmentalist, but I like it from a distance. But
that is an oxymoron.
I love looking at nature from inside of a conditioned room. No, I want nature to exist. But I want it to thrive. But for the first time, I had a community garden plot, and I did not realize how impactful it was for me, how important it was for me to actually go and get my produce and cook my produce, mm-hmm. the thing that I made from a seed mm-hmm. with my own hands. And I don't know, I guess maybe it's going to change my trajectory, like encouraging more people to try it. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm putting myself in this group. I need more exposure to outdoors in a way that isn't traumatic, in a way that is safe, in a way that just says, let me just settle in this space and not hate it. Mm. And I think that's part of the healing work, right? Like, of, you know, because we get outside and it's like, oh, it's hot. Oh my goodness, all these bugs. But just like settle into it and do the personal work of connecting again with outdoors. Because the outdoors has never been our oppressor. It was something else. So nature, the land, was never our oppressor. It's the things that we were forced to do here on this land. And I think redefining that for ourselves is a part of, I mean, we can make small steps, a little garden, a little plot inside a pot inside of the kitchen. Or maybe it's just trying to find a vegetable at the grocery store to cook at home and try again, right? Like, I've read in a paper about the healing properties of collard greens and just like really falling in love with the produce again, or falling in love with just the idea of being outdoors and in peace. I think it could do a whole lot for our mental health, but also like our reconnection with the land and environment and kind of stating our claim about what why we're here and that we should be here.
When we talk about just the idea of gardening for people of color, for people who are economically disadvantaged, that, to me, gardening, it is healing on multiple levels, because it gives you access. It gives you access to health. It gives you access to food that you don't have to pay for. It gives you access also to reconnecting from reconnecting to the earth. Mm-hmm. And so it being healing on multiple levels makes it, I know here in New Haven in particular, we have a lot of community gardens. Mm-hmm. And it has been a lot of effort made in getting people reconnected to just a simple thing like gardening.
Right.
I think that for me personally, I've gardened for years. I mean, I was like, when I first had children, we had a garden, and I literally did not buy vegetables from the store until maybe like February.
Once
you get like deep into winter, and my kids grew up, go outside and pick a cucumber, go outside and pick some kale, go outside. So, and I raised them right here in the middle of New Haven.
Right.
I often think about, like, what was it about my upbringing, about what my mom talked about that made me want to connect to gardening? because I grew up in the city, yeah. And my mother that I can remember never had a that I can remember. She used to, I was actually born on a farm, so she used to farm, do the whole homesteading thing, but in my memory, because we left here when I was a year old, I don't remember, but I always remember her talking fondly mm-hmm. about how good it felt to plant her own vegetables, to plant. And keeping in mind also too, you know, it was really a balance because she also talked about helping her parents and grandparents share crop.
Right.
So there was like both of it, but she always had like this fondness, and I think that is what I picked up on, the fondness of. I'm the opposite of you. Like, my biggest challenge is remember to put on gloves when I'm digging in the dirt.
Right?
I actually like putting my hands in the dirt with no gloves. Like, I want to feel it. I want to walk with grass between my toes.
But that was a process for me. Like, oh my goodness, I'm about to actually be dirty. And it wasn't like a nasty kind of, like, thing. I completely agree. My family is from the South, and, like, I remember asking my grandfather, how do you kill a chicken? Because it was so foreign growing up here in Connecticut.
Mm.
We didn't need to do that, right? Like, and I was just a kid, and it just baffled me, like, oh my goodness, you had a farm. You had potatoes and all of that. But, like, being raised by a single mom and a mom that needed to work and, like, chaos and busyness of life, I didn't have access to gardening young. She did try very hard to, like, have us, my siblings and me, have us do outdoors things, like hiking and stuff like that, like programs where she could find them, because she was all about finding the free program. But, like...
But, you know, that brings another thing that I think can't go without being mentioning is the disconnection to not just Black people, but, you know, people today from things like gardening and being in nature. Sometimes it's not trauma. Sometimes it's just, I don't got time.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
it's really the social economic position that you're in
yeah.
that does not allow you, because it's not, you do have to put time and effort into gardening.
No, I get
and
it.
If you're working two jobs and you're raising three kids by yourself and you don't have anybody to help you,
right.
then you come home in the evening time, you trying to
get
the dinner on the table, kids fed, homework done. You don't got time to go outside and do some gardening.
Right.
So it's
that's practical. Yeah.
It's a structural thing as well.
Yeah. I get that. And I don't know, in some sense I still want to push back and say, but your health, right? Your mental health, your well-being, your family's overall health. Like, because I don't know a mom that doesn't care about literally the health of their family, right? So if we look at this as a component of health, then we'd add it to the list just like everything else. And I don't know, in some sense, I want to encourage Black women, including myself, to take a moment to actually think about our mental health and our well-being as a priority,
mm-hmm.
along with all the bills and the other things that we have to do in this world, like surviving and actually, like, I love the word thrive, and thriving, like, surviving well, mm-hmm. is a part of that. So, and maybe it's not gardening for everyone, but it's like, in what ways can I improve how I'm living and I'm thriving and not just making it?
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't always a conversation about, like, going to sit in the dirt for people. It might be, what's the biggest thing hindering you from thriving? And let's talk about that, because that's environment too.
You know, one of the aha moments that you gave me when we talked prior was, we talked about Black people and why Black people don't recycle. I thought that was hilarious.
So when I met Ashley, was like, oh, why don't Black people recycle? Because it seems that, you know.
And what you said was really profound. Like, that was, like, literally life-changing profound for me.
It's real.
So why do we think Black people don't recycle?
I actually think that's wrong. Like, white people say stuff like that, or environmentalists say stuff like that, but black people recycle. We all know if your grandma wrapped up the leftover food in the butter container, right? And you had to go get the mayonnaise jar to fill it up with spaghetti sauce. Oh, or what do you put your oil in on the stovetop, right? Like, every black family recycles. We don't recycle in the same sense that the larger community does, but we reuse, and I value that. America wants us to say, why don't we put our cans in this container and our plastics in that container? But if you look through my kitchen, you see jars that have all been repurposed, plastic bags that are now conditioning bags. Like, I am going to use this bag multiple times.
I had that conversation with a friend of mine. I was like, this new Connecticut not getting paper bags, I mean plastic bags,
it's gonna change their conditioning process.
Bruh, it is affecting black women more than anybody. That's like, so bruh, funny. Because we use the bags from the store as shower caps, as conditioning caps,
right.
As my son pointed out, I was having this conversation with my son as well. He was like, that's the bag that we use to put the flour in to fry the chicken.
Right?
What we gonna do?
So the whole concept of single-use plastic bags, it's like, no.
Yeah, I know. Who's using a plastic bag one time?
Right. In the black community, it's not a single-use. It's a multiple-use plastic bag, right? And I'm going to try to get as many of it as I can, as many uses as I can.
Absolutely.
Out of it.
Yep.
It's hilarious, and it says to me, and this is what I'm doing in my research at Yale, it says to me, we need to start thinking about the environment on our terms, in our language, in our ways, and not just adopting what the larger, like, I use the term white a lot, but the larger community, or like environmental community, wants us to believe is true, or the perspective they want us to have. So yeah, black people have always been recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't know, I feel like my grandmother's whispers in my ear, don't you throw that glass bottle away. You know you can reuse that. Like,
yeah.
it all has a purpose. And maybe the black community is focusing more on reuse. Mm-hmm. And maybe the larger community needs to focus on reuse also, because recycling isn't working in America as well as it's supposed to or should.
Mm-hmm. I think that this, to me, what it brings to mind is when we have these issues, each community has a different solution to them.
True.
And it is defined differently. It sort of reminds me of the conversation that I've had a lot around feminism. And white feminism looks very different than black feminism. And so it seems, so after a conversation with you, I was thinking about that a lot, and I was like, you know, environmental action to white people is different than environmental action to black people. So defining what that is, and then I think that the other point that you made that's also thought-provoking is, if the black community is really focusing on reuse and the white community is really focused on recycle, we need to figure a way to intersect those things, right?
Yeah.
We can't be two complete silos, because
right.
we share the earth together.
Yeah.
So I think that those conversations may not be happening
yeah.
as much or as it's needed, and the two conversations are not together and intersecting when we are making policies,
right.
like getting rid of our plastic bags.
Right.
Right.
So we needed a black woman in that room when y'all made that policy. Well, part of it is, a lot of times, I've been in this place, where a lot of times where when we're in a white room, a decision-making space, we feel like we have to adopt the majority's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, having this perspective might be so different that it's not valued. And the truth is, it's like, hey, reuse is valuable, you know. And
but it's the 3 R's. That these are what we're.
It used to be the 3 R's. Yeah, recycle,
reduce, reuse.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And we seem to have focused all of our attention on the recycle part.
Yeah. Well, the reduce part was getting rid of plastic bags in the stores. So I won't just say that. Like, and I think that is still making progress in a certain way. Like, it's changing our habits. I was hoping that it wouldn't change our habits to the point where it makes life uncomfortable for some people, or like things harder for unnecessarily. But it is just a change of habit. It's uncomfortable for a while, but I'm already finding new ways to condition my hair. I mean, I think we all will in time, but I think what Black community could do is more assert their perspective and not just feel the need or pressure to take on someone else's agenda. To say, no, this isn't my top priority. This is. Something else is. That is what I want to talk about and what I want to fix and my community needs us to fix. Instead of feeling like we have to jump on somebody else's train or bandwagon in order to be environmentally sound or whatever.
So talk to me a little bit about your work in your graduate studies at Yale and what you hope to achieve through that.
Yeah, so I'm still defining what I want to do, but I'm learning a lot. Overall, I'm going to end up writing a thesis because one of the things that I see is that water contamination has happened across the country, and it's typically seen in poor and Black, urban, people of color settings. And I think that consistency is too strong. Like, how is it that we can look at any urban center and probably find a case of contamination? Mm-hmm. I also want to challenge the idea that government has our best interests in mind without our involvement. Mm-hmm. So, I guess my research is in general questioning whether government has ever had Black communities' interests in mind. So the idea that government can protect us without our involvement, mm-hmm. which is why I hope to encourage more Black people to get involved in decision-making at every level, no matter what your education, your income, your housing status, get involved in decision-making because you have more power in that sense than just being a receiver. Mm-hmm. And as Black community not being a part of the decision-making, is putting our health, our long-term health, at risk. It's risking our children, our own personal health. It's putting us at jeopardy in ways that I don't want to negotiate. I don't want to push back on. So my research in general is going to question government and hopefully support the communities that I explored. And I know too many instances in Connecticut where contamination isn't a concern. And the ripple effects of contamination are long-term, handicaps it ends up affecting the overall function of a person or a child in a way that it shouldn't. Mm. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
It was. It was very enlightening, and I'm telling you, life-changing on some of the points. Right? You say the simplest things, and you never know how it's going to affect me, but I'm like, aha moment, ding, right?
Right?
So, for sure.
But it's so true. Don't come to Thanksgiving without your containers.
There you go. Before we go, what can you leave our listeners with for something that they can do that is going to impact both and improve their lives as well as the greater community?
Mm. Wow, I would say before making any huge steps, really defining what environment means for you and what out of that definition, whether it's your health, whether it's your money, your economics, whatever it is, then deciding to be a part of some decision-making in that area. So if it's showing up to a city council meeting, if it's showing up to a volunteer event, individual power is huge. But first deciding, in what area am I driven to?